Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This was violent, it was brutal, it was a terrible thing that occurred.
This is the first murder in Manio in more than a decade. Someone fatally stabbed Stacy Stanton inside her apartment on February 3rd.
The only way to understand Stacy Stanton's story is to move counterclockwise in time, to go backwards to the point her clock violently stopped.
The night of the attack, friends saw Stanton leave the Green Dolphin pub.
That crime scene, whoever was there, they were covered in blood.
He's a monster. Whoever he is, he's got to be a monster. To do what he did to her was just...
They wanted a suspect. You know what I mean? They wanted a suspect fast.
To the police and the DA's office, this case is closed.
We have some reason to believe through witnesses that they may have known each other. And
word of an arrest spread quickly through this island town.
But to those who knew Stacy, her case is very much unsolved. And instead of catching her killer, an innocent man may have also been victimized purely based on racial bias.
Welcome to Right Lane, a podcast of the Tampa Bay Times. Each week, Times reporter Lane DeGregory discusses her stories and answers your questions. The focus is on craft. My name is Maria Carrillo, and I'm the enterprise editor at the Times. Today's topic, digging up old murders. Joining us today is Delia D'Ambra, a UNC Chapel Hill graduate who's been an investigative reporter for about 6 years. She's covered major crimes, murder trials, and community news in Virginia, North Carolina, and Florida. In January 2018, she began researching the homicide of Denise Johnson and became immersed in drawing attention to the unsolved case, which led her to host the hit podcast, Counterclock, which released this past January. Throughout the 12-part series, Delia revisits her small coastal hometown of Kill Devil Hills, North Carolina, to dive deep into the 22-year-old cold case that's marred the image of where she grew up. Season 2 of Counterclock premiered in September, which centers on another local murder, this time of Manteo's Stacy Stanton. Lane was featured in season 2 since she covered the case when she worked on the Outer Banks. Thanks for joining us, Delia. So how'd you get into podcasting? And we were thinking, were you influenced by Serial? Is this that true crime thing?
I was influenced by Serial, Up and Vanished, just a lot of different combinations of that true crime space. I mean, obviously, Dateline being a heavy hitter, you know, that's always an influential, entity that's out there. But I got into podcasting because of the skill set that I had from being in news, being in TV broadcast, for 6 years. I was really sharpening my skills of storytelling and, interview skills, transcription skills, like all of those things. And so creating a podcast and a show and doing it was just merging all of those things that I was sharpening together to make a longer form project that I felt like I could really put my heart and time into, because in television news, you're working with minutes, you know, to get a full report done. So that's just what led me into the space, and I'm glad I found it.
Did you work on other podcasts before you got your own, or how did you get your own podcast this year?
So I created Counterclock on my own, and after releasing it on my own, I was approached by Ashley Flowers, and we began a business partnership together. And so we remastered and re-released season 1 of Counterclock to really reach a big audience, which the story so deserves. I continued to work that case, and we put, you know, updated leads in the end of that season as things were happening. But really, you know, having my own podcast was just at the time, was a personal effort to just do something that I loved and try and make a difference and use the skills that I had to get into a space space that I thought was interesting and I was a big fan of. So it was sort of a self-starting thing that then became, an opportunity for AudioChuck to have a great show and, get these stories out there to the people that really, should be hearing them.
Did you grow up hearing about these murder cases? I mean, what drew you to do that particular kind of work?
Yeah. So, I mean, I did not know about the Denise Johnson case growing up. She was murdered in 97. That's when my family moved to the Outer Banks, was in 97. When I wanted to start season one, I said, let me just Google a case, right? I'll do it in my hometown. If there's one, I'll be shocked. But there was one. And it's crazy. All of the elements to it starting out were just so intriguing and so saddening, really, that more hadn't been done to try and get some resolution or a reinvestigation. The Stacey Stanton case from season two, I had always grown up. I actually grew up kind of skateboarding and running around the Ananias Dare Street where Stacey Stanton was killed. I went to church right across the street from it. So there was always this sort of growing up of, a lady was murdered there. But, as a kid and a teen, you don't really know any of the details of it. But until I took it on for season two, I had no clue the depth of that case. So it was really more of a, I hate to say it crudely, but growing up, it was more of a kind of a ghost story type understanding of something that real happened, but now it's obviously significantly way more than.
I thought you did such a beautiful job of creating a sense of place with that. I mean, I lived on the Outer Banks from 1990 until 1998, and it's such a magical place. It's such a like a middle of nowhere place, and that period of time, I think too, it was so changing. I mean, I had a front page story about, ooh, we had a stoplight on the beach road, right. Front page story about the Walmart coming to town. So everything was changing during that period. What do you think you were able to do with those stories because you knew that place so well, because you grew up there? How did that help influence your reporting?
Well, I think, you're right. It's setting the scene. I mean, you could just say coastal North Carolina town. Well, if you look at a map, there's a lot of coastal North Carolina towns, and they all have their own vibe and they all have their own feel. Emerald Isle is a lot different than Hilton Head, even though it's in South Carolina, than Beaufort and the OBX. So my thing was, how do I translate to people how Manio is from the perspective of someone who grew up there, riding her bike, walking, going to church? I mean, I rarely left the island as a kid. So, it's setting that scene. It's showing the relevance of the history, right? Because that particular area is very historic. And so how did this murder and this tragic sequence of events, how does it fit into this completely opposite idyllic city or town? And the drastic contrast it's so apparent that if I don't paint one fully, if I paint one more fully than the other, the crime and not the area, then you're not really getting why it's so important, So that was big for me. And I just think the influence of growing up there and knowing street names like the back of my hand is that's critical as a writer, I think.
So walk us through your research process. How do you start to peel back on a story that's, decades old?
Yeah. So my process, obviously, for the two seasons is very different, right? So the Denise Johnson case, that's unsolved. So from the perspective of being a reporter, I'm literally going and digging up never before known stuff. I'm going back from absolute scratch and I'm trying to help bring resolution, help solve it, whatever you want to say. But so that's very different, right? Because there's not a lot of public record. Everything's sealed because it's an active case. There's no witnesses on a witness list that you can go track down. You've got to just find them. You can't start from some pre-prepared pile of documents. But in season two with Stacey Stanton, because the case to some, to some degree went through a traditional judiciary process, right? It went through the criminal justice system. You do have a treasure trove of transcript and information, and you get to understand who are the characters I need to talk to. Are these people still alive? Understanding law. And so they're very different, but I always start with being in the area, starting ground zero, going to the crime scene, and then go out from there. And obviously with the passage of time, finding family members of the victims, that widens out because people have scattered over the decades. So, it's a combination of all those things. I call them I talked to an FBI agent the other day, and it's called parallel lines of investigation is what he referred to it as. And it's so true. You're never going in one track. You're going in tracks that are side by side and getting as much as you can.
How do you balance the audio with the context that you want to get across when you're putting together these podcasts? You know, that challenge of when do you leave it to the audio to help you tell the story versus your impact as a writer. I assume that's been a process and you've been learning how to juggle that.
Yeah, I mean, in the audio space, it's really different. To the respect, it's different from where I came from, right? Which was video and TV. So, you know, you having the cops in on camera is kind of tells the story, right? But when you don't have that, you've got to paint the scene. So there's a combination of for me, it's a combination of letting the recorder roll at all times, right? So if I'm meeting someone I've never met, or it's a phone call or something, you know, obviously within the bounds of legal consent and laws and things like that, you know, but getting all of that, capturing it audio wise just helps me paint a picture. You know, if I'm calling a state entity, I need to get that on record. I need to describe for the listener the same process that I went through. You need to hear it for yourself, how difficult it is to get a record or how easy it is, or, you know, whatever the case may be. So that's the marrying of audio to doing it well. But, you know, with some things in the show, you know, yeah, there are effects added in. As a writer, I'm envisioning a scene and, okay, I don't have raw audio of, you know, keys jingling or something. So we add that in editing, and a lot of podcasts do that. And I think people realize, okay, you know, that's a added in sound, but I think it helps paint the picture. And that's, as a writer, what you're trying to do, especially in a narration style where you don't just want to hear me drone on for 15 minutes. You know, you got to break it up somehow. And so that's an element of it too.
Do you write the scripts and do the audio yourself? Are you the one man band here?
No. So I do all of the interviews. I do all of the transcribing all of the interviews. I still do it my old school method, pretty much by hand, which is, you know, just me. But and then I do all the script writing and outlining. And then we outsource to a subcontractor for the editing called Resonant Recordings. They're a fantastic professional podcasting company that really does an amazing job of following script. And we have a great relationship where, you know, my editing notes, they understand how I write, and it's a good process with them. And so that helps, obviously, on the time side for me.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Me, you know, I want to work with a good company, but I can't be doing the editing myself. It's just a huge time consumer. So, you know, that relationship is really good. But yeah, most of it's heavy lifting on my side for the beginning part. And then once I hand it to them, it's, you know, it's full steam ahead till the season comes out.
So, Delia, how do you get people to talk about these 30, 20-year-old cases, especially like prosecutors or judges who, you know, might feel like you're making a judgment about the work they did?
Well, I think my approach is always, hey, look, I've done the research. I have really dedicated time and effort to see everything from all sides and get as much information as I can, so that I'm not just coming to them with speculation or coming to them with rumor. I'm saying, hey, I'm looking at these facts. This is what I've interviewed people. This is what's being said to me. How can I get you to give me your side of it? And to some extent, particularly in season two, and even in season one for sure, there's been significant cooperation from, you know, whether it be former attorneys or prosecutors or district attorneys who have taken the opportunity to participate. The ones that don't, I think, again, you're just that constant struggle of, look, I'm not trying to judge you. I'm not trying to say you did something wrong or right. I'm trying to say, explain it, because it's never been explained. And, you know, you don't have to explain it to me. Explain it to the listeners. Explain it to people that are wanting to know the truth. And so there's a balance there. There's trust and relationship. There's working on people for months, and then they agree to talk to you, and then they decide not to talk to you. So, you know, I think it's just balancing that. But I always try and go into it with as much information as I can. So it's not just me going, hey, I need your comment. If you don't comment, click bye. It's a conversation that's had more so than anything.
Well, and it seemed like for some of the people, even the more surprising, like the prosecutor from back in the day, that it was almost cathartic in a way, like that something had been weighing on these people for a while, right? Like, did you know that going in, that it was going to be something that people maybe said they didn't want to talk about, but were glad to once you got them going?
You know, I said this the other day to somebody. It was staggering to me that when I came into it, I thought, you know, it was going to be more people were kind of, ooh, it's been so long. Why are you approaching us? When in reality, I ran into almost all of the people in season two were like, finally, someone's asking us about what we know. Or, you know, finally, I feel like I can hint to something or say something. There's this sense of relief from a lot of the interviews where they're like, I thought no one was ever going to ask me, you know? And so that was most surprising to me. And I think you're right. There is a advantage maybe of the passage of time where people suddenly now feel like it's safe enough to really say how they feel. And to me, as a writer and a storyteller and a journalist, that's what you're there for. That is where the truth lies. And so, yeah, it's been interesting.
What are you hoping for when, I mean, there's so much appeal to true crime. People are really into it. And maybe it's some of what you just talked about, you know, that it's, they were important and they didn't get the attention they needed, or maybe people are looking for some sense of resolution, but what do you gather from your audience that they are getting from this? Or what are you hoping they're getting from it?
One, I hope that they are learning about a tragic case of a murder and an injustice that they didn't know about before. I mean, not giving knowledge to a greater audience of wrongs being done is what I think is kind of part of the journalistic creed in many respects. So making people aware for sure is a huge, huge goal. And I think it's been accomplished by the show. And secondly, providing information that wasn't previously known to a lot of people high up on the food chain and people that deserve answers, like family members. And so I think giving peace to people that want peace, giving them knowledge is a big part of it. You know, advocating for wrongs being made right is a big part of it too. And especially with season two, where, you know, there's a lot of information that that points in other avenues that were never looked into. And I think that's a huge travesty on the judicial system's part in North Carolina. And to let people know that is a huge point of the show in season two. And that's just a motivation, period.
Do you think that the podcast could bring about change in terms of reopening a cold case or finding the guy who was accused in season two obviously is out of jail and served his time, but if there's still a killer out there, do you think that your podcast could bring awareness to break some changes?
Oh, I think absolutely. I mean, we saw a tremendous, success in season one with bringing it to the district attorney's attention, who was unaware of the Denise Johnson unsolved case. So, you know, somebody who held office in Dare County as the highest chief law enforcement officer didn't even know that the case existed. So that in itself is a huge, huge victory, for the family, not so much for me. But, secondly, getting leads out there, right? Having a district attorney say, you know, this case is no longer considered cold. You know, that tells me something is going on behind the scenes. Now, I'm not privy to that, but, and I shouldn't be, but, you know, it tells me wheels are turning. At least I hope that. And so that's a plus for that case. For season two, absolutely. I think this season's going to make a huge difference in Clifton Spencer's life. I think it's already made a huge difference in Stacey Stanton's surviving family member's life and the community as a whole, right? I mean, there's people that didn't even know this story. And so to me, again, it goes back to the knowledge and it goes back to the impact of, yeah, I think a lot of things could change. I hope people in North Carolina government are listening and paying attention, because in the end, they're going to hold the key to righting wrongs. And, putting that pressure is kind of what I'm after, at least for season two.
When you gravitate to these particular cases, I mean, I assume some of it is the access that you might be able to get, but what are the things that you're looking for when you decide whether to make it a podcast topic?
I'm obviously looking for a story that's, there's so many questions. There's things that need to be reexamined and things that really don't add up. And for me, as a journalist, that is a draw because it tells me there's more to be found and there's more to be revealed. And so that's my biggest pull. Not that any case is not deserving of a lot of attention. I mean, I have a lot of people write in, will you take, you know, this case up or that case up? And my heart wants to do all of them. But to some extent, the ones that I pick to really give a year of my life or 2 or 3 years of my life to are the ones where I really, truly believe in my heart that more can be done and that answers are being hidden, either due to, you know, bad handling of an investigation or they're being hidden because somebody wants them hidden. And so, you know, that's the motivation for me, I think, for sure.
So you're getting people whose response is to like tell you, oh, let me tell you about what happened to my family. Does that happen a lot?
Yeah, a lot of people write into me, you know, daily and they say, hey, I have a loved one. There was a murder or there's a suspicious death or and my heart, you know, it breaks because it's a reminder of how much this happens. Or I have a missing relative and, you know, and of course, I'd love to be detective for everybody. But in reality, you know, that's obviously not realistic. And to be quite honest, that's why we have a system of law enforcement, right? That's their job from the get-go. Not that I wouldn't want to ever contribute my services to that, but, you know, there's a law enforcement system for a reason. And so, yeah, it breaks my heart. And I always respond to those people to the best of my ability because it really is a tragedy to know how many people listen to true crime that, in fact, are living and walking in a true crime themselves. And that's real sad.
Can you talk a little bit about your audience, who's out there listening, and whether there's a certain demographic that surprised you?
Yeah, so that's the cool thing about podcasting is there's this huge expense. I mean, I get messages from, like, you know, teen, preteen, like true crime, you know, addicts to people that are you know, in their 60s and 70s. And so there's this great audience of people that just really like this genre and they really like the show. And a lot of them are interactive on social media and you know, it's this cool community from all over the world. I mean, I have people that have written me from Iceland and Germany and Russia and, you know, South America. And it's just, to me, I'm like, oh, that's so cool. You know, we've got billboards. That's great. But for me internally, it's that Denise Johnson's name is known by someone in Australia. Stacey Stanton and Clifton Spencer's names are known by people in California and wherever that never would have known their names before. And that's, for me, that's the coolest part, aside from all the popularity and everything. But yeah, it's pretty cool.
It sounds like you found a niche for your career.
Yeah.
I mean, this has become a really good natural place for you.
Yeah, I think when you grow up being someone who asks questions and stuff, you never really know that this is how something's going to flesh out. You never know. I mean, I never knew, like, okay, I'm going to be an investigative journalist in podcasting. But when you realize the impact you can have, you know, you kind of realize, all right, well, this is what I'm known for. And maybe one day I'll evolve into something else, but who knows?
Do you have a season 3 that you're embarking on?
Yeah, right now I am in production for Counterglocks season 3. I won't say what the case is, but it's, you know, right up the alley of same, you know, the other shows, the same, you know, kind of type of investigative style and writing and such. So it's been, I won't say. for right now,
stay
I won't
tuned.
Say. But but it really is, it's again, it's all the elements of these cases where it's just almost unbelievable. Just the facts and the people that come forward and stuff. And for me, it's just a reminder, you know, these stories are out there a lot more than people think.
So again, it's Counterclock. You can find it, I guess, wherever you can find podcasts, right?
Yeah.
If you have a question for Delia or for Lane, or you want to suggest a podcast topic, find us on our Facebook group or email it to writelane@tampabay.com. That's writelane@tampabay.com. Join us next week on Wednesday morning for the next podcast. This podcast was produced by Ayana Ishmael. Music was composed and performed by Dan DeGregory. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.